Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Get more at 971talk.com.
All right, welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. Chugging along here, 6:08 on your Tuesday morning, the 17th day of June. And I'll just throw this out here. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, but they're having a blood drive over at the Range St. Louis West today. And I'm going out there at 11 a.m. to donate blood. They're going to have the mobile van out there. You can go to their website, therangestl.com. And if you want to donate, they still have slots open. They're taking appointments throughout the day while they're there so they can get you in and out quickly and you're not tied up all day. So I hope to see you out there at the Range, 14803 Manchester Road in Baldwin a little later. We're going to talk to my friend Phil Balsamo this morning at 7:37 as well about what they got going on at the Range these days. They're giving away some ammo, which is a big deal. If you love the Second Amendment, you can never have too much 9mm, in my opinion. So you have an opportunity to win some if you register. It's free. Just go to their website, and you can find out more on that, therangestl.com. Lots going on this morning. President is in D.C. There's lots of reporting, apparently, according to the president, in error about what he's doing. He's a little mad at the French President Macron, who apparently got slapped in the face again, this time by Donald Trump, not his wife, when he reported that Trump was going back to the White House to try to get a ceasefire with Iran. And Trump says, nothing further from the truth. I haven't called Iran. I'm not going to call Iran. We negotiated with them for 60 days. They did nothing. And on day 61, they got bombed. I told them what was going to happen. They didn't seem to want to listen. It's okay, Mr. President. They're insane. They're the leading state terrorist group right now, the leading state sponsor of terrorism. So we told you you can't have a nuclear weapon. And these people just don't listen because they're insane. That's the bottom line. So when we find out more about what's going on in Washington, we will let you know. We it's just not clear this morning. We know the U.S. has moved some assets into the region. We're trying to keep an ear on that for you. We are going to get a live report, we hope, from Jonathan Savage of Fox News Radio coming up at the end of the 7 o'clock hour. And in between now and then, we'll keep our ear to the ground for you. All right. I mentioned earlier about 6:22, we're going to talk to Rachel Homolock. She is a parent. She has spoken out before on some of the nature of some of the books available to your children in our libraries, specifically the St. Charles County Library. And they're going to be debating a policy change tonight on how you can challenge those things. And it's an important issue, and we're going to get to her and explain why it's important if you care about this. If you have kids that go to the library out in St. Charles County specifically, I think St. Louis County is probably lost. But if you can still go fight for freedom out in St. Charles County, and you can have some influence maybe on this policy change tonight. So we're going to get to details on that for you coming up here shortly. Right now, though, Drew, if you will do me the favor of getting to the shortlist, I would appreciate it.
The Mark Cox shortlist.
I actually really love Trump. I think he's a deeply humane, kind person. And I am saying this because I'm really afraid that my country's going to be further weakened by this. I think we're.
Yeah, that is Tucker Carlson, who's really loves Donald Trump, but thinks that he's about to get us in a war and we don't want any more wars. And I mean, nobody said that louder than Donald Trump. I think Tucker probably just needs to take a chill pill.
Response to Tucker Carlson criticizing you, saying that you were complicit in the war.
I don't know what Tucker Carlson is saying. Let him go get a television network and say it so that people listen.
Time to go to a network so that people listen. I know he's getting plenty of listens on his podcast, but Yeah, Donald. Donald just doesn't have much use for you once you've left the White House, and Tucker is stepping on his you-know-what right now.
Store takeover. It happened in a matter of minutes at the AutoZone on the corner of Century and Hoover here in South L.A. It was just after 4 a.m. when drivers took over the intersection doing donuts, burning rubber, when suddenly dozens of them decided to take over the store.
Because, you know, why not? We're against you coming in and arresting illegal criminal aliens in L.A., darn it. So I think we should just loot the local AutoZone. Doesn't that make sense?
Could use a new battery.
Yeah, maybe they need a new battery.
The Capitol is a very, very secure place, and I'm sure it'll depend on sort of the threat matrix that exists. Politics is a substitute for violence in many ways, right? We can't have one creep over into the other. You can't have violence replace the kind of vigorous debate and elections that you have to resolve these differences and move the country in a particular direction.
Yeah, there's Senator Eric Schmidt talking about what happened up in Minneapolis and the reaction to the left on all of this. I mean, what a horrific situation for the left to have tried to make this out to be a Republican problem. I mean, seriously, I've got enough sound bites in my files here that for the rest of the 3 hours left of this show, 2 hours and 45 minutes till 9 a.m. this morning, I could play you bite after bite after bite of people like crazy mad Maxine Waters. In fact, the current governor of the state of Minnesota calling people to the streets to violently protest Republican policies, specifically those of Donald Trump, but just to get up in their face, to challenge them. We have to be more fierce, I think is the word Tim Walz used. And then these hypocrites have a shooting in their own home state. Somebody who was a political appointee of Tim Walz. I saw a picture of him yesterday wearing a Resist T-shirt with his wife with an I'm a Proud Democrat T-shirt on. And yet they want you to believe this guy was some sort of a right-wing fanatic. So it must be the Republicans' fault that he shot and killed two people and wounded two others. What's happened up there is it's a tragedy. But it's also strikes me, and I don't want to put this back on them completely, but do you know he had already shot two people and wounded them when he went to the senator's house, and police were at the house he went to when he killed the second two people. Now, I don't know why they didn't engage with him sooner, but this was the story told yesterday by the acting U.S. attorney up there. Listen.
Two Brooklyn Park police officers arrived at the scene. They, too, had been dispatched to check on Senator and Representative Hortman after learning of the shooting of Senator Hoffman. When they arrived at the scene, they saw Belter's black SUV parked in the driveway with the emergency lights flashing, and they saw Belter standing in front of the house several feet from the door. When Belter saw the officers get out of the car, he drew his weapon and began firing. He rushed into the house through the front door, firing into it. He repeatedly fired into the house. And when he entered, he murdered Representative Hortman and her husband, Mark.
Now, he was also able to get out the back door and escape through the woods. And then, of course, you know the rest. There was a manhunt, took him a day or two, and then they found him hiding in some woods somewhere. I'm not blaming the police officers. The point is he was in a police uniform, which would throw anybody off. There's a lot to unfold in all of this. But for the hypocrites, and I've got a soundbite I'm not going to play here because I'm going to be out of time. For the hypocrites in Minnesota politics to try to blame this on the GOP is the silliest thing I've ever heard. The woman that got murdered was a Democrat who had just voted with the Republicans on budget cuts. Why was he after her? I don't. You know why? Because when you shoot somebody, you're insane. They didn't act this way when James Hodgkinson shot multiple United States congresspeople who all happened to be Republicans at the congressional baseball game back in 2017. That had nothing to do with the fact that he was a Bernie Sanders campaign worker. Please. All right. Just pointing out the hypocrisy going on in Minnesota around that complete tragedy is what it was. All right, quick break here. Rachel Homolock coming up. We'll talk more about which books you might be or might not be able to challenge in the St. Charles County Library. Well, did you ever wake up on a Tuesday and it felt a whole lot like a Monday? That's what Drew and I are experiencing here this morning on the show. Everybody's gone. We're having phone problems, and it's just great. So it's no big deal. We will power through it because that's what we do. This St. Charles County Library Board thing, they have a policy right now where if you have an issue with a book you find on the shelves, you think it's not appropriate for children to have access to, you can appeal it. But you appeal it to the same people who made the bad decision to put it there in the first place. So that's what you're facing if you try to do that at the moment. And tonight they're going to have a big meeting where they're going to consider a new policy where they would have some people from the community in on the decision-making process on all of that. I think that would be fantastic. That meeting's at 7 o'clock tonight. Rachel Homolock is joining us right now. I know a longtime parent and mama bear warrior in the St. Charles County area. Rachel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I am excellent. Thank you for mentioning this, because this is such an important issue.
Well, it is, and I hope people are paying attention, because in St. Louis County, the ship has sailed. I don't think there's any hope in St. Louis County, but at least in St. Charles County, we might have some common sense policies put in place. What's at stake tonight?
So, okay, first up, let's back up. Nationwide, in most library systems, this reconsideration policy is pretty standard, where first it goes to, like, the librarians. And then if you appeal it and you don't like the decision, then it goes to, say, like the board, and whatnot. And that's very typical. So I don't understand why so many of these lefties are freaking out. Well, I do know why. What's happening is over the past few years, since I joined this library fight, we now have more conservative minded people on our board. And so that's why they don't want the appeal process going to the board, because they know that some of these materials are going to be scrutinized, as they should, because they are very sexually obscene and disgusting and should not be in the hands of minors. So that's why they're all up in arms and they're, claiming, oh, we want our intellectual freedom and we don't censor. Well, guess what? No, we do. We protect our kids from sexually obscene materials.
But you support the changes that they're going to vote on tonight?
Absolutely. And then there's like you said, circulating, there's kind of a rumor going around that they are going to be providing even like a further committee of citizens. And that makes sense, because if you live in a conservative county, your board at the library and the employees at the library, for that matter, should reflect that community. But what's happened is that the American Library Association has basically trained all of their minions and their librarians, and they've taken over the library institution to make it super radical left. I mean, as of right now, Mark, there are no library science degrees that you can get that is not directly tied with the ALA.
Wow.
And so, and what they're saying is, so all these lefties are saying, well, guess what? I trust the librarians because that's what they went to school for, and I trust their expertise, and they're the professionals. No, they're not. I'm the parent. I'm the professional. I'm the one that gets to say what my child is exposed to and what they're not. Guess what? You don't have that right. Step aside.
I love that we're having this discussion, because I know there were questions for a while on who was on the board in St. Charles County, and I think they made a few changes to that library board. But anything you can do to give parents a more direct voice, if you walk into the library and you're seeing, well, you can give me an example, a clean example maybe, of some of the material that's been found in these libraries.
Yeah.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I mean, let's talk about it. Is a really gross teen book that is in the library. It's perfectly normal. That's found in the juvenile section. It says on the cover 10 plus. And we're talking, it's got vile, vile illustrations, just naked people doing, you know, things that you do when you're naked, and kids don't need to be exposed to that. And so, yeah, you're correct. The board has kind of transformed. We've slowly but surely been transforming it. I'm going to call out, to David Zucker, Buddy Hardin, and Matthew Seeds. They're the ones that are kind of leading the path on the board right now that are more conservative. And we need to support them because they're the ones that are ultimately going to be transforming the way that they shape the library systems and to ultimately get these materials out of the hands of our children. They are there. When Jason Kuhl resigned last fall, his swan song was that he ordered tons of these books and put them into all of our branches. We need to get them out.
Amen. And this is at the Spencer Road Library Community Commons Room tonight at 7 o'clock there on Spencer Road in St. Peter's. Rachel Humalack, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Yep, keep up the good fight. We appreciate you. We're going to be back in just a minute. Welcome back into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Happy you're with us on a Tuesday morning. It's muggy outside. It's muggy in the studio, which is unusual for us down here because usually you're freezing to death in here this morning. But we're happy that you're with us. Keeping an eye on a lot of things this morning, including the fact that, we just finished a special session. There might be another one. I don't know what to think about that. We've got former Senator John Lamping on the phone with us this morning. John, how are you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you on. You know, I was just reading these comments about the fact that John Patterson, the House Speaker, is calling for Governor Kehoe to call for a new special session that I guess would go along with the veto session that they'll have, in August or September, that would focus just on property tax assessments. Wait a minute. I thought we just fixed property taxes with the so-called uneven caps we put in this big bill.
Yeah, I think the speaker is acknowledging the fact that what they all voted and agreed to just last week, after you and I spoke last Tuesday, they all voted for the stadium bailout bill. It included some language surrounding property taxes and freezing them or not freezing them for certain places, but then not for other places. And he recognizes the fact that's all going to prove to be unconstitutional and thrown out. And so he's trying to make up for that. And he's asking for a special session to be concurrent with the veto session. And the reason why you would have it be concurrent would be that the cost associated with having the legislators in Jefferson City would not be an additional cost. They're already going to be there. But veto session is all of about 2 days or 3 days.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to veto this governor, override the vetoes of this governor. So it's kind of silly, and he's just trying to make up for the fact that everybody in politics knows that what happened last week was a complete boondoggle. But it's been a week now, so the media swept it under the rug, and no one's talking about it. And when it's all said and done, if both the Kansas City teams decide to take us up on the offer, and it's no doubt the St. Louis Cardinals are going to take us up on the offer, that we're looking at a cost of over $2 billion directed towards our sports teams here in Missouri.
Yeah, $2 billion. I just want people to think of that for a moment, and then I want to read you the reaction from the owners out of the Kansas City Chiefs after they got this. They're still not happy. We're grateful, they said, for passing this legislation. It's important. There's still work to be done, and this enables the Chiefs to continue exploring potential options to consider remaining in Missouri. I mean, that is a pretty lukewarm response to a $1.5 or $2 billion tax incentive, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad they're responding that way. My answer to that is, please move to Kansas.
And
we'll save the money. The offer that Kansas has put in front of them is to cover 70% of the cost of constructing a new baseball and a new football stadium. So think about that. The what the Chiefs have proposed in Missouri is to update the stadium at a cost of about $1.1, $1.2 billion. All of these new football stadiums easily approach $2 billion in cost. So Kansas is willing to pay for 70% of that. And I'm pretty sure the Royals are leaving. The Royals want to be in a quote-unquote urban setting. They had a site in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and it required the vote of the people for some property, some sales tax addition, and they voted it down. Just like people don't know that in Jackson County, Missouri, where the Chiefs and Royals play, there was a ballot initiative to raise taxes, and the people that that would benefit most directly by those sports teams, they voted it down. The Royals have bought land in Overland Park, what used to be the old Sprint campus. It's in a really affluent suburban area, but the campus is large enough to house the stadium. So my bet's on the Royals definitely moving to Kansas. It's just a question of whether or not the Chiefs want to go over to the other side of the city and build a brand new stadium. It wouldn't surprise us if they did the same thing.
Wow. Let me switch gears with you here for a minute. I was talking about this earlier. I have been surprised, John, and you're one of the most conservative people that I know, that I talk to, and I highly respect your opinion on these issues. I have been surprised at the number of people who I consider very conservative, who have been highly, highly critical of Donald Trump and what and our support for Israel in this, in what's going on with Iran. And they think that Donald Trump is dragging us into a war. And this is a guy that's been completely opposed to the idea of going to war with anybody. What's your take on it?
Well, I think that the movement, the MAGA movement that he started and is the head of, is completely against the idea of any kind of ongoing wars and anywhere in the world, but particularly the Middle East. What was the Bush foreign policy that so many in the Republican Party to this day still have this approach, the neoconservatives that really feel like no war is a bad war. There's a big part of Trump's supports, and myself included, that I don't want anything to do with an ongoing military engagement. So we'll see what happens. This is an opportunity for him to make a mistake in foreign policy and drag us into an ongoing war. But that hasn't happened yet, and I'm hopeful that it doesn't happen. But the idea that we would look abroad to try to solve other people's problems when it's very clear that the United States has got a long list of its own problems that it certainly has having a hard time funding the fix, or even the desire to try to fix, it doesn't seem like that would be the top priority. But what's going on in the Middle East, it is what it is. In my personal opinion, it feels like Israel is pushing the agenda for the here and now. Trump doesn't like to be led. He likes to be the leader. So we'll see how this week goes.
Yeah, I wondered about that, because really what it gets down to is if our policy is to support Israel and help defend Israel in the event that they're attacked, it puts you in a bit of a pickle, because you've got forces over there. They're getting fired on from Hamas. They're getting fired on from the Houthis, who are all proxies for Iran, and now Iran's firing missiles at them.
Well, to the extent that I agree with you, all of our allies expect our support if they're attacked. But in this example this week, it was Israel that did the attacking first. So when that happens, you have to really assess whether, to what extent did Israel do something on their own that they shouldn't have done. It's not so clear cut. Clearly, if Iran had bombed Israel first in an unprovoked way, then the role of an ally would be clear. But in this circumstance, you know, we started out, my understanding, well, certainly the press covered it the first go round, is, oh my gosh, they're days away from having a nuclear bomb. And Netanyahu himself this weekend in one of the talk shows said that they're probably within a year of having a bomb. So we've gone from the emergency code red, got to get rid of this bomb, to, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we changed the regime? So that's a different animal. And again, there's a lot to be learned, I think, in these next 3 or 4 days. And if we come back this time next week and we're bombing Iran, yes, I think that a lot of Trump supporters will be disappointed that we've found ourselves in the midst of what could be an ongoing affair.
Yeah. John Lamping, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Take care, Mark.
Absolutely. Yeah. John discusses the quandary very well there. I agree that a lot of people, me included, don't want to get involved in any more of these foreign wars. And it strikes me as pretty clear that the majority of people who are supporting continuing to send all of the aid and resources to Ukraine is because that money got funneled straight back to the suburbs of Washington, D.C., to the military-industrial complex. There's no doubt about that, that a lot of people in D.C. supported that for that reason, because they were enriching themselves on it, which is a separate issue as to whether or not we want Ukraine to win in that situation, because most people do. But you also have to understand that you get in dangerous waters there when you risk putting American troops on the ground anywhere, and that's the concern with a broader war in the Middle East. So we'll see what happens. If there's any progress this morning, I still have faith that Donald Trump knows exactly what he's doing here, and I'm not quite ready to claim, like Tucker Carlson, that he's about to kill potentially America and the MAGA movement and lose his base over this. I don't know that that's going to happen. We shall see. Coming up, Sue Thomas is going to help me out with in other news right after the top of the hour. Next hour, we're going to talk to Todd Pyro, host of Fox and Friends First. We'll get back here in just a minute.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
Oh, my goodness. Sue Thomas knows how much I hate snakes. I hate snakes. This story terrifies me. I got a couple stories out of Florida this morning. Get this one, Sue. More than 20 tons of pythons have been removed from Southwest Florida in the Everglades region since they started their effort in 2013.
20 tons?
20 tons of these things.
What did they do with them?
Well, they kill them. But the point is, they remove them because they're trying to keep them from overpopulating, right? So they found the largest female python ever down there. It was 18 feet long and weighed 215 pounds.
That is beyond disgusting.
They can eat their weight in their body mass at any given time, and they eat a lot of the other stuff down there, right? So what they do is they tag the male pythons in order to track down the breeding female python so that they can find them. And then they pay people to remove them.
Okay, and is part of this because, tell me if I'm wrong here, but people would get pythons and then say, you know what, this is unmanageable, and then let them loose.
Yes. Yeah, and that's how it all started, because they're not native to the Everglades, and now they dominate. They're like an apex predator down there, and they've just taken over. So,
okay, well, that's disgusting.
Thank you.
There is a story out this morning, and I'm always slightly horrified that this could be Americans, but in a museum in Verona, Italy, they've got this fancy chair. It's covered with Swarovski crystals, and it's supposed to be, it's based on Van Gogh's chair, you know, the painting that he has, the famous one with the chair in it that's well-known.
Yes.
So we've got some tourists who wait for the people watching the room, the museum employees, to leave. And they start taking pictures with this chair. Like, one is fake sitting on it. And they are not thin people. I'm not saying that's completely relevant. But this, if you want to track them down. So the guy gets up. She takes one. She's fake sitting on it. Well, this fat guy sits on it and breaks the chair. And in a museum, so you can see her kind of pull him out of it, and they kind of just scurry out of the room and leave it for museum officials to come in and find. Oh, it's just awful.
I've seen it. And it's not clear if they're going to charge the guy for doing it.
Well, the one I saw said they couldn't find him. Did you say that you found one that where they tracked him down?
No, but I just said that it wasn't clear if they were going to be able to charge anyone. Maybe that's Maybe that's what they meant.
Well, and they were really worried that they wouldn't be able to fix it, but apparently they are able to fix it. But, oh, my gosh, and you're on video, you terrible people.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, by the way, they've just released a list of the most dangerous beaches in America, and apparently Florida leads the list. New Smyrna Beach was number one because of shark attacks and apparently, you know, the tides that can suck you out into the water.
Yeah.
Coming in at number two was Laguna Beach, the Panama City Beach, and Daytona Beach came in third because of their powerful currents and the fact that they've had a bunch of surfing deaths and almost 70 shark attacks.
So I didn't realize it was that sharky down there.
Just so you know, that's the deal. Thank you, Sue. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you this morning. Coming up, we'll talk to Todd Pyro of Fox and Friends first. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.